From the KTOO Newsroom, I'm Claire Strempel with a look at the news. Thousands of students across the Anchorage School District went back to school Thursday at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. The closure of Ursa Major Elementary School added another layer of newness to the first day. Alaska Public Media's Katie Anastas went there this morning and has this report.
Class up!
Yes!
Now your bodies are frozen, your posture's hot. Ooh, I see some slouching though. We set it nice and tall.
Catherine Earhart takes her third and fourth grade students on a tour of Aurora Elementary School. It's the first day of school, and Earhart is still getting to know her way around the building, too. She's among the teachers and students sent to new schools on Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson this year, after their school, Ursa Major Elementary, was closed over earthquake safety concerns.
It's been overwhelming, and it's definitely been a roller coaster, but we have a really great supportive team here. I think at all schools that are receiving staff and students, they've been really great.
About 200 Ursa Major students started school at Aurora, with others going to Orion Elementary or Ursa Minor Elementary. It might take some getting used to, but Earhart says these students are resilient.
They are very quick to welcome new people. They're very adaptive. So definitely the families and the community that they built is very near and dear to my heart.
Margaret Jones is the principal of Aurora Elementary. She says that community is especially important this year for Ursa Major families. To help with the transition, Aurora held its open house the day before school started, rather than the usual first week of September.
I told parents last night, you're not guests here, you're part of our family.
The start of the school year hasn't been easy. Schools on J-Bear haven't been immune to the district's shortage of bus drivers and cafeteria workers.
Ursa Major was a walk-to school, so about 95% of the students were within walking distance of Major, and so that has been a huge change for them, having to walk to buses.
At Aurora, there are also more classes per grade level this year. Teachers rearranged classrooms to help keep grade levels close together. But Jones says J-Bear students are used to a lot of change.
In a typical Title I school, we see about 23% to 26% mobility rate. On the base schools, we do see a much higher rate, almost double what we see in a Title I school. So, we may not be Title I designated, but we do have a lot of those similar needs.
Those needs include extra social and emotional support. Teachers in each class appoint students to help welcome their new classmates. Earhart says 3 years into the pandemic, there are still signs of its effects on students.
You definitely still see the gap. There's a lot of educational gaps between the students, and you still have a really large range of abilities.
She and Jones say the pandemic has taught students and staff to be flexible. Standing outside Earhart's classroom, Superintendent Jarrett Bryant says he appreciates it.
We have immense gratitude for the families and the staff and the school leaders who have stepped up to make sure it's a smooth transition. It wasn't easy, but being at the schools this morning has showed me that we're all ready to do whatever it takes to make sure that our Major students are taken care of.
Earhart says despite the challenges of the last few weeks, she, her students, and their families are ready for a great school year. In Anchorage, I'm Katie Anastas.
A family with deep roots in Soldotna has been named the 2022 Alaska Farm Family of the Year. The award comes nearly 75 years after the family first homesteaded on the Kenai Peninsula and set up a commercial farm there. KDLL's Sabine Pooks spoke with the current owners about that history and has the story.
Martha Mary's home on Pickle Hill is a bona fide farmhouse. The dozens of garlic plants drying on the floor of her living room during a rainy spell are a dead giveaway.
The instructions I read on curing garlic was withdraw water from it for a week or so before you pull it.
It's a little late in the season for garlic. Mary, stepping over a row of scapes, says she's not sure she's going to bring this garlic to the Lancashire farm stand at the market like she usually does.
So I'm just going to mince those and use them for the family.
Which we do love it when the garlic scapes come on.
Martha Mary and Amy Seitz run Lancashire Farms in Soldotna. And this year, they're the Alaska Farm Family of the Year, an accolade given by the state at the Alaska State Fair to honor a family that epitomizes a commitment to local agriculture. Lancashire Farms has been committed to that goal for longer than most. Larry and Rusty Lancashire arrived in Alaska in 1948 by way of Ohio. They were some of the first homesteaders in Soldotna and one of the few homesteading families that farmed commercially and stuck with it. Mary, not even 5 years old in 1948, says her dad's interest in farming was rooted in his time in World War II. While he was serving as a pilot, his plane was shot down, and he spent over a year in a prisoner of war camp.
While he was there, Red Cross would send some books. Some were about farming, and so he looked at some of those. And
after he got out, he tried careers in insurance sales and in crop dusting, but Mary says neither stuck.
So then when crop dusting didn't pan out and insurance didn't pan out, and he decided to come north. So it took him quite a while to drive a half-ton Jeep pulling 4 tons on a trailer up the Alcan.
When the Lancashires finally arrived in Alaska, they set up shop on the property the farm sits on today, on Pickle Hill.
I think Dad always had in mind having a commercial farm. So first everybody needs to have eggs, so he raised chickens.
But the neighbors weren't so warm to the idea at first. Mary says the people in nearby Kenai were so used to eating dried eggs that they didn't take much to their fresh ones.
And so Dad tried dairy cattle. After all, every family needs milk. But likewise, the people in Kenai were so used to canned milk that they didn't like fresh 33% Guernsey gold.
Finally, the family got into potatoes. They'd sell them on contract up at Anchorage. And eventually, Larry Lancashire got out of the farm business altogether. He bought Larry's club in Soldotna and became a commercial fisherman. But farming stayed in the family. His granddaughter, Amy Seitz, grew up spending summers on the farm and doing 4-H.
Which I've always been interested in the farm. You know, I always knew this is where I wanted to be.
Today, the farm does most of its sales directly from the property and at the Soldotna Saturday Farmers Market. They also sell eggs to Odie's, plus yarn spun from their sheep's wool at shops around the peninsula. And they're working on expanding how much they can produce, bringing in more sheep for the meat and fiber, and expanding production on plants, like the garlic.
We need more layers. We need to do more meat chickens. We need to sort out our sheep and have more production there.
And the historic farm has been adding new plants into its rotation too, like yadfa, a brassica from Asia, and celtis, a cultivar known for its thick leaves and stems. Seitz is also the head of the Alaska Farm Bureau, and she says there's a lot of enthusiasm today statewide about local food, driven in part by the recognition that Alaska's really cut off from the rest of the world. Mary also says people recognize that local produce just tastes better. It's a far cry from those early days in Kenai.
I think there's a lot of interest in homesteading and growing gardens and learning how, and I think that is really good. So I think it's important that we as farmers reach out and help individuals learn to garden on their own area.
Mary and Seitz are heading to the State Fair in Palmer this weekend. They'll be presented with the Farm Family of the Year Award on August 25th. In Soldotna, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Homer's crane count starts back up this weekend. The Ketchumek Crane Watch Project has been holding the annual event for about 5 years to get up-to-date local data on the once-threatened species. During the last two Saturdays of August and into early September, organizers ask Homerites to track how many sandhill cranes they spot and report those numbers before the large birds migrate south to central California for the winter. For a time, the species was threatened due to overhunting and draining of wetlands during European settlement. But now researchers say numbers seem to have stabilized, and they know that because of the crane counts. Self-described craniac Nina Faust thinks there are at least 300 to 400 in the wider Homer area, but that's likely an underestimate.
The trends seem to look to me, from what I've been seeing over the years, that our population is at least for sure stable, but I think it's actually increasing.
She says the Crane Watch would like to know about specific crane sightings in the Homer area for the next three Saturdays. And the Federal Aviation Administration has approved Aleutian Airways to begin flying in Alaska, according to the statement from the airline Thursday morning. They are cleared for flights to Cold Bay, King Salmon, and Dillingham, but are still awaiting FAA approval to land in Dutch Harbor and Sand Point. Aleutian Airways says an announcement on scheduled service and routes will be released this fall. When fully approved, the airline would service Unalaska and other Alaska communities with Saab 2000 planes, same kind of aircraft involved in a fatal crash in Unalaska in 2019. The airway delayed its original 2021 launch, saying it was studying safety recommendations after the crash, but they have successfully completed all FAA requirements to safely begin operations. You are listening to KTOO.